Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Happy Friday for those of you who spend a grueling week at work. The weekend always meant something when I worked a lot. It doesn't mean too much anymore. Any day is the same as the next. So, but for those of you who look forward to your weekends because it's time off, time with family, time to accomplish things that you haven't been able to work on, then I think everybody looks forward to those days. Tonight, I'm going to talk about some stuff that I found online today about another social network. It's called ask.fm. Not sure what the FM stands for, but it is it's quite a site. I'm going to bring in Shelly so that because I'm going to go off my dashboard so I can read this on the computer. Hi, Shell.
Hi, Reen.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Good. I wanted to bring you in before I pulled up this site. I posted it to my Facebook site, but okay. I wanted to be able to read it on the screen. It's you know, there's a lot of controversy today about social websites, and I can speak on a personal note about Facebook. I find Facebook to be most of the time fun. I've hooked up with people that I haven't seen in some cases 50 years. I've re-established friendships that, you know, have been long gone, and it's nice. And I see what everybody's doing, you know, how big a family they have, what they've done with their lives. I've quite enjoyed it, and I'm on Facebook every day, and I do appreciate the input most of the time. Now, I will say that during the political wars that go on in our world today, and some of the other things that happen, like Ed Snowden and a few other things like that, I struggle with some old friends and people that I really care about with some of their actually bigoted comments about the president, about our government, about all the things that all of us have complaints about. But you know how big I am on respect.
Right.
And I think running your mouth on a social website like Facebook almost makes it look like you think you could do a better job. And, you know, it's living room presidents don't get very far.
Right. Right.
You know.
And I agree with you. I agree with you about that also.
I just think, but what it was designed for was to hook up with old friendships, maybe start some new friendships, be able to talk to people all over the world. I have Facebook friends in England, in France, in actually all over the world, all of Mexico, all over the world. I have friends that I can talk to. I have a niece that I haven't seen in many years who lives in Norway, and she sends beautiful pictures of her home, and she has a garden, and, you know, she shows pictures of her harvest and everything, and it's wonderful. I would never see that otherwise. So I have great appreciation for what it was established to do and what it does do in most cases. But like everything else, you know, people can twist things until they no longer resemble what they started out to be.
Exactly.
And apparently, this I never heard of it before. It's called capitalask.fm. It's a little known social.
Frank Mary?
Yes, yes, like Frank Mary. It's a little known social site. Is known now for cyber bullies, suicides, all this kind of stuff. I tried to get in earlier today just to have a look at it, but of course they want all my information. They want to know if they can take from my Facebook list, so I declined. But I want to read some of it. I may not read all of it, but I'm going to read some of it. And the reason it's come to light is because the young girl that we talked about last night, Hannah Anderson, was seen on this site. It says it's popular with kids and until recently obscure to many adults. Ask.fm is a Latvia-based social networking site. I don't know what Latvia is, unless it's a foreign country or something. I don't know what it is. Where members interact by inviting others to ask anonymous questions. Well, now, that right in itself, you know that that opens up doors that are often left better closed.
Right.
So the site has more than 65 million members who interact in more than 30 languages. It wasn't until Monday that Ask.fm made headlines in the United States. That's when kidnapping victim Hannah Anderson, barely 48 hours after her rescue, logged on using the name HannahBanana722. Her identity later confirmed by her grandparents. Anderson openly answered personal questions about her ordeal, posted by anonymous strangers. She also posted several smiling selfies, which is a cell phone self-portrait as well. Yet for all the catharsis and connection Ask.fm may have provided Anderson, as well as youth who are suffering lesser traumas of adolescence, it also is one more virtual hangout where kids go to torment each other. Now, I will agree with that, and let's go over what they've just said. In essence, they've said that because Hannah couldn't talk to anybody else, her mother is gone, she has her dad and her grandparents and obviously some friends, but this was an opportunity for her to unload. That's a good thing.
Right.
However, when you do things where people don't have to ever say who they are, you never know what you're going to run into.
Right.
And very sadly, this particular site has shown that on several occasions, which I will get to. But as it said, you know, it's a wonderful thing because they can talk through some of the traumas of adolescence and get rid of some garbage and maybe feel better, but it also is a virtual hangout where kids go to torment each other. Ask.fm, like Facebook and other social networks, limits memberships to ages 13 and older. And just like Facebook, there are likely kids who lie about their age to join Imagine My Surprise. Unlike Facebook, Twitter, or even Tumblr, however, parents are likely not to know about Ask.fm, let alone what their kids are doing there. Teens are sharing more than ever on social media, according to a 2013 Pew study, and they prefer to do it anonymously. And on social media sites not shared by adults is what's preferred. All of my grandchildren have two sites, by the way. One that they invite me into and their parents into and their aunts and uncles into, and one that they don't invite us into. And I know that. I'm aware of that. They're aware of the fact that I'm aware of that. And I tell them that if they're doing something that they're ashamed to show me, they ought to, you know, think about what it is they're doing. Well, we're not ashamed to show you what we're doing, Grandma. We just don't want you to see what other kids do. That's the answer I get. Now, of course, I look at them and say, and I bet you think I believe all that. And they say, well, Graham, it's just, you know. And I say, I get that you don't want me to know everything that you're doing. I'm actually okay with that to a degree, as long as you don't get hurt. And, of course, this website proves that they can get hurt. The people that operate these websites have got to step up to the plate and show some responsibility. After parenting groups criticized both the government and Ask.fm for alleged abuses happening on the site and asked the government to shut it down. In August, a statement following the death of Hannah Smith, 14 years old, the fourth United Kingdom suicide connection to the site, a spokesperson said in the statement, Ask.fm actively encourages our users and their parents to report any incidences of bullying, either by using the Insight reporting button or via our contact page. All reports are read by our team of moderators to ensure that genuine concerns are heard and acted upon immediately, and we always remove content reported to us that violates our terms of service. Well, that's a pretty good generic comment, I would say. But it obviously didn't stop anything or fix anything. Regardless, the United Kingdom government doesn't have a lot of control over a site based in Latvia, so that must be another country. And some question whether shutting it down, whether shutting down the site is the answer. I put the wrong emphasis in the wrong place on that sentence, and some question whether shutting down the site is the answer. Following Cameron's condemnation, that is, Cameron is the person that is in charge, or he's the prime minister that they ask in the United Kingdom to do something about this site. And he called for a boycott of the site. But it did, you know, it didn't do him any good. So after he got shot down, an independent columnist made a point, many adults forget in their anger and grief. If we take down Ask.fm, do we really take down cyberbullying as a whole, the same cyberbullying that took place before and will surely take place after its existence? People trolled on MySpace, bullied on MSN, and now victimized on Twitter and Facebook. When children want to bully, they will bully anywhere and by any means. Until we teach them the serious effects of their behavior, prohibiting Ask.fm will merely send a generation of cyberbullies in their droves to another site. Good point, right? Very, very valid point.
Yeah, that is a good point.
Mm-hmm. And this is more of what Izzy talks about. Again, there's something going on this weekend that I was going to try to find out more about and got too busy today to do it. But there's an organization starting up here in South Florida to come up with some more ground rules in the schools about the bullying. And it's what Izzy teaches us, that's not always the right answer, just like this isn't the answer. The answer is, like we talked about last night, you don't just put a Band-Aid on everything and expect it to get all right underneath the bandage while you're not looking at it. And that's kind of what they're trying to do. If they close down these sites, it's not going to really stop anything. Indeed, before Ask.fm launched in 2010, kids hid from their parents on its anonymous Q&A predecessor, FormSpring, which I never heard of either, best known to grown-ups as the online forum where Anthony Weiner exchanged racy questions with a 22-year-old woman. FormSpring was connected to the 2011 suicides of two teens who were allegedly bullied on the site. You know who Weiner is. Anthony Weiner. He's the Congress guy who was caught talking dirty and doing soliciting a young girl, and his wife stood by him. You know about all that, right, Shel? Yeah. Somebody wrote to me on Facebook. I don't know why he keeps putting himself out there. And I said, I think he's looking for more exposure. Hint, hint. And everybody cracked up. But I was like, you know, I don't know why he's out there either, putting his face out there and trying to act like everybody's, because he's guilty and he's trying to look for forgiveness. But that's a whole other story. Anyway, the year before, it was Sticky Gossip, another obscure with adult teen forum. If you have even a passing acquaintance with the internet memes, I don't know what that word means, M-E-M-E-S.
M-E-S?
You may remember. M-E-M-E-S.
Yeah, I don't know what that means either.
Mm-hmm. You may remember the 2010 torment of the 11-year-old micro-celebrity Jesse Slaughter, not her real name. Her personal videos brought the online and offline harassment fomented on a less obscure forum, 4chan, which led to the viral video of her father threatening his daughter's internet tormentors that consequences will never be the same. Well, that's quite a paragraph. Apparently, somebody was being picked on, and so Dad got on the site and kind of went crazy. As a lot of writers have written in different newspapers and journals and things, that shutting down one potential host of teen bullying will send a generation of cyberbullies in their droves just to another site, which is what we just read. Whether on the internet or in real life, kids will always find places to connect in places where adult eyes can't find them. Amen. We know that that's true. Perhaps the best solution comes from the United Kingdom Parliament member, Diane Abbott. Following PM Cameron's condemnation of Ask.fm, she emphasized the need to give greater importance to teaching children about relationships. She explained to The Guardian, "This would mean that children would not only learn about how to cope with sexting and pornography, but they would also discuss how to relate to each other on the internet." All of which I agree with.
Right.
So, again, it's a, you know, there's so much. There's even, there's like little quips from other sites. Miley Cyrus, "I know what color my skin is. You can stop with the friendly reminders." You know, it's just, I don't know. It's people being mean to each other more than anything else. Brittany forgets to wear pants. You know, that all of this stuff is just to see how much, you know, how much you can ridicule another person. I find it, to go against everything we talk about and everything we should be doing to help our kids be, I don't know, socially more sound. If you pick on everybody that you're friends with.
Right, and a lot of that, and we've discussed this before, is that a lot of that is because kids don't have a comfortable or a solid idea of who they are. And when you're, and we've seen this with adults, with adults that are trying to improve themselves, all right, when you don't have a solid foundation of who you are, you're not completely okay with who you are, or there's some vulnerability or uncertainty about who you are, you're going to rip other people apart to take the focus off yourself. You know, kids that are okay, kids that have good self-esteem, kids that have some level of confidence, they're not the ones that are out there picking on the other people. The ones that are doing the worst bullying are the ones that are not happy with who they are. They're you know, there's some level of disconnect there, because somebody who is okay with who they are, you know, doesn't have it in them to be mean to somebody else. So you're talking about a generation of children that aren't being supported emotionally to feel good about themselves. And it may sound like a simplistic analysis of the problem, but I've seen it literally hundreds of times that people that are okay with who they are, that are comfortable with the type of person they are, the type of life, it doesn't mean that everything is a bed of roses for them. It's just that they know how to cope. They don't have a mean bone in their body. And the people that are really, really mean, you can tell they don't like themselves just by how they conduct themselves. It's more out of insecurity than anything else. So, and unfortunately, we have a huge generation of kids that are being ignored, that aren't having their self-esteem supported, that aren't being taught how to feel good about themselves or find good things about themselves. And here it's almost at an epidemic proportion.
Well, I think that's an interesting word that you just used, coping. What does the word coping mean to you, Shel? Give me a for instance on how you cope with something that you find a little bit tedious, maybe trying, maybe something you don't look forward to. How do you cope with it?
Well, I mean, if somebody says something to me that's unkind, instead of getting angry with the person, I try to first of all not let it bother me. You know, so it's a conscious effort on my part to not allow it to get to me, but to try to flip it around on some level and realize that for that person to say something so mean or mean-spirited, that there's something bothering them. And so my coping mechanism is to try to be a little bit, what is the word I'm looking for, observant and compassionate. So by bringing those two emotions up, and I might feel hurt initially, but the coping comes in with then taking those hurt feelings or those angry feelings and not acting on them and kind of using my intellect and my reason to make myself feel better, to dissuade the negative emotions, and then to flip it around and feel some compassion for the person that was just mean for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't you think that it would behoove us to teach the young children in our lives that more than likely, if somebody goes out of their way to hurt your feelings, we often talk about personal things. Let's make it about you're walking home from school. You're 12. You're walking home from school, and for the first time, it's the beginning of the school year, and for the first time, you have some new friends, and they walk past your house, and your house is not in the nicest neighborhood in this school zone. You're feeling a little bit nervous about some of these kids because you've noticed the clothes they have on and everything, and you don't really want them to see your house. All normal reactions for a 12-year-old, I might add. So you actually walk past your house, right? You actually walk past your house and walk everybody else home and then circle back around to come back to your house so nobody knows what house you live in.
Right.
So then, a month goes by and eventually other kids find out that that's actually your house. So somebody addresses you about that and says, and kind of does it in a tone that makes you feel like they're making fun of you. Because most 12-year-olds wouldn't know how to do it any other way than that way. And they say, geez, why do you walk past your house every night and walk us all the way home? What are you, ashamed of the house you live in? Or you didn't want any of us to know you live in that part of town or something like that? Now, here's the truth about that comment. That comment was generated by you, right?
Right.
Because you're the one chances are you didn't even give these kids an opportunity to like it or not like it. You made the assumption that they're not going to like it, so you're the one that you know, started the ball rolling towards something that wasn't true, that you were playing a role with. So now they've confronted you, but you're going to feel like the victim, like Izzy talks to us about how so many people think that they're the victim when they're actually the bully. Now, this is a whole reversal of this.
Right.
You, as a kid, have actually brought this upon yourself because of your own personal self-esteem, right?
Right. It's almost like you put the thought in their head, and now they're just reacting to it.
Right. They may not have said a damn thing. And as far as you know, of course, this is 12, so you don't think this far ahead. But these are the kind of things that I'm saying that we should talk to the kids about. In truth,
right.
You don't know where they live. You're assuming that they live in a place that's nicer than yours.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't really know yet. So now
you've
started a falsehood that you have to keep up. And, you know, there's a funny thing about stories that you tell, or lies, if you prefer to call them that. I don't think they always start out at lies as lies, but the longer you tell them, the bigger lie they become. And you can't always remember a lie. The truth, you don't have to worry about forgetting, because it's the truth.
Right.
So when you're a kid, those are the kind of things that I think we should talk about with them. We should say, you know, if you're maybe you're embarrassed. I mean, I've had the teenagers tell me I don't have to drop them off in front of all their friends. And I say, are you ashamed of your grandmother? No. Don't be ridiculous, Grandma. They just don't want all the kids knowing that their grandmother brought them over. You know,
right.
And I just smile at them, but at least I make them face what it is they're hiding from. What do you think, those kids don't have grandmothers that take them places? None of those kids are old enough to have a vehicle. They all get dropped off by mom or dad or grandma or older brother or sister.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, a lot of this stuff is about, you know, communication and talking about what's really going on. But when you can be anonymous, that's what opens up the scariness. Because then you can say anything you want to say and nobody ever knows who you are.
Right.
And that's what hurts more than anything. Now, in this particular article, I think they mentioned 4 suicides just in 2010 from one of these websites. And all these kids were... Yeah, all these kids were like 13, 14 years old. And, of course, 13, 14 years old, that seems to be the real hot spot. That seems to be the time when, you know, you're either going to make it or somebody else is going to break you. It's like, I don't know, it's like the turning point or something. I used to think that age was like 16, but now it's younger. It's considerably younger now. And very scary for them, because it's all about, for them, it's all about what other people think about them. And that's too bad.
But see, but that's kind of what I was getting at before. If you teach a child to feel good about themselves no matter what, and you teach them that there are going to be people that will realize who they are, and there'll be people that are going to be mean to them because they're in a bad place. I mean, this is something that you know, parents should be teaching the children. The school should be teaching kids this, you know, that you can't allow other people's opinions of you to tear you down. This should be something essential taught in school, and parents should be teaching it, so that if it's taught in school and it's advised that parents teach it, you know, hopefully, you know, one or the other will get the child and teach them to have some resiliency, you know. But part of the problem, and Izzy talks about this, And I agree with him 100%. And it wasn't like this. It wasn't like this when I was a kid, all right? But children today are taught that it's not okay for somebody to think something bad of you, all right? They're actually taught that. So they're not prepared for it. So when somebody does say something mean, instead of just blowing it off like, I don't care, you know, what do you have to do with my life? I don't care what you think of me. They're like, they're crushed because they're being instilled with these ideas of, you know, don't let anybody disrespect you and things like that. So children are being taught the wrong way of having pride. Telling people that they're not allowed disrespecting you isn't going to gain you respect. You're demanding something that somebody who's being disrespectful to you, they're not going to all of a sudden respect you because you put a finger in their face and say, you know, who are you to disrespect me? And they want to throw down and start fighting and stuff. You know, I don't understand it. And I see it so much in this current generation. And I see it in some of the parents of the current generation. So obviously you see it's like a trickle-down effect. But kids, they can't handle criticism. They can't handle people that have really nothing to do with their lives thinking poorly of them. And that's just utter nonsense. Because you're never going to have everybody love you. You're never going to have everybody even understand who you are or how you think. Find that one person or that group of people that make you feel good and care about what they think about you. But everybody else, completely ignore. Who cares? Who cares if everybody outside of your circle thinks you're a complete goofball or a complete loser? As long as you have that one person or that group that you hang out with that gets you and likes being around you, that should be all that matters to you. And unfortunately, these kids put too much importance on the wrong people. Like that one kid you read that committed suicide, and all the people from his school were like really upset. So obviously there were people that liked him. He wasn't even aware of it. His letter that he wrote was all about, you know, I'm a loser, I shouldn't be here anymore, and nobody cares about me. So evidently he was not even aware that there was one person that liked him, and the reaction of his schoolmates were that a lot of them were very upset that he took his own life. So obviously there were people that liked him, and he had put a blind eye to it because they just get so caught up in one or two people that are ripping them apart, they don't even see the people that actually do care what happens to them, and that they close themselves off to it.
Well, I think that that's an extremely valid point, and I too agree with that. I agree with Izzy, and I agree with everything that you've just said. And it is difficult. But I'll tell you something. Speaking as a mom, you have a tendency to think that that's the way to build up your child's self-esteem by saying things like, I hear myself saying it to AJ's getting ready to go into the first grade, and him and his mommy went last night to get signed in and to take his school supplies and everything, and he came home and told me how many kids from kindergarten are going to be in his class, and I heard myself saying, you're going to have a ball, everybody's going to love you. And I probably shouldn't be saying that to him because everybody isn't going to love him. But it is a tendency, and it is something that kind of like comes from you for a means of support, because you're thinking they're going to be scared and they're going to be worried about making friends. So you do say things like that. But you're absolutely right.
No. But you're talking apples and oranges here. I'm not talking about telling a kid, you know, building him up or building her up and saying, oh, my gosh, you're going to have such a wonderful time in school. I mean, that kind of just gets him excited for the experience, you know. And he has such an open communication with you that if he had a bad experience at school, he'd come right home and tell you about it. I'm talking about the kids that, first of all, are not given positive reinforcement from their parents, that don't have a healthy self-esteem, that aren't told that, you know, that aren't made to look forward to something, All right. So they're looking towards their peers for, you know, for an ego boost because they're not getting it from their own parents. And then the parents are standing there saying, don't take that, don't take this, and don't let this person disrespect you. And then you're creating, you're either going to just trash this kid so much that he's going to be afraid to deal with people altogether because he's just terrified of rejection, or you're going to create somebody who's like very, very angry, and if you show them the least little disrespect or criticism, they're ready to attack you because they're either pushing them into becoming too passive or they're pushing them into becoming too aggressive. There's no balance there. There's no being okay with who they are. The only time they're okay is when other people are okay with them. And for the most part, most people aren't going to be okay with you because they're doing their own struggles. They really don't care whether you're okay. But if you're all right with who you are, then you can pretty much ignore the rest of the world. I don't walk around day in and day out looking for recognition or approval from people. When I was much younger, I did, but I don't anymore. I grew out of that. But that's because I was given a pretty healthy self-esteem as I was growing up. And, you know, and my mom, I got to give her credit for that. You know, she used to tell us, in fact, she used to say things like what I was just saying a few minutes ago. She said, you know, she said, people aren't always going to recognize your gifts or your talents, and it's up to you to just know that they're there. And as long as you know you're being a good person, all you really have to do is answer to yourself. And she pointed to her heart. She said, so if you know in here that you're doing all right, that's all that should matter, and ignore what anybody else says that they might see different. You know, she said, because when people aren't doing the right things with their lives, they're going to try to make you look bad because it makes them feel better about themselves. And so I kind of already took on that concept when I was much younger. You know, that always stuck with me. But a lot of kids aren't taught that, to just feel good about who they are. It sounds overly simplistic, but it's not. That one thing, to just tell a kid to be okay with who they are, is extremely powerful.
Well, I think I agree with that as well. But what I'm getting at is when you are giving them. I don't know. There's kind of a fine line because I've done both. I've said, you know, you like the people you like and they like the people they like, and everybody's not meant to be best friends. I've always said that to my kids and mm-hmm. to my grandchildren. But I guess I'm just thinking about if the kids are okay with who they are. First of all, that's a very healthy place to be. And very sadly, it's not something that is just an automatic thing. It's kind of something that you have to grow into and to learn how to be okay with yourself. But the part I was saying about the house is a lot of times the kids bring some of the bad stuff upon themselves because they do have things that embarrass them. They do have things that they know kids, if given the opportunity, might make fun of because they're prejudging, so they know other people are prejudging them. And it's a human nature thing. It's not something that isn't possessed by everybody. Everybody has it, and some people deal mm-hmm. with it in a good way, and some people deal with it in a bad way. What I'm saying is, like, if you're teaching kids, because I think you're right, Shelley, I think there should be classes or a class or something, just like our little friend up there in northern Florida who started the Gay Straight Alliance and things like that. I do think that in grades, maybe not kindergarten, is too chaotic already, but maybe first, second, and third grade, there mm-hmm. should be some classes about, you know, kind of being respectful to each other. And well, we talk about embracing other people's differences all the time. You can't tell an 8-year-old to embrace somebody else's differences because they're going to look at you like, what are you talking about? You know, they're not going to get that. But right. there should be things that we can say to the kids so that they don't find the need to be mean to you before you get the chance to be mean to me, because that seems to be the consensus.
Yeah.
You know, I will attack you first so that I'm ahead of the game before you attack me. And that very often stems from low self-esteem and from some kind of embarrassment for whatever reasons are going on. My sister and I are totally different. When you came in my house, if it was summertime here in Florida, my mother might be sitting at the ironing board ironing clothes with a pair of shorts and the top to her bathing suit on. Didn't bother me a bit. And if you came in my house and didn't like my mother, you could leave. That's me. Barbara,
right. On
the other hand, she wouldn't let kids come in the house because she knew mom might be sitting there ironing clothes with her bathing suit top on and a pair of shorts. And mom was heavy. And that would embarrass Barbara. Didn't embarrass me. I figured, you know, if you don't like my mother, don't come over.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
And nobody told me to be that way, and nobody told Barbara to be that way. It's who you are and what your makeup is about, I think. So,
right.
But the point is that it would make life a lot easier if there was something you could say or classes you could give to young people so that if they're not embarrassed, they're not going to embarrass you, is the truth of the matter. If they're not ashamed of something in their own private life, they're not going to try to make you ashamed of something.
Exactly, exactly. Right, exactly. And the whole thing is that what you're saying is like you and I are closer in personality, and that when we were younger, we were pretty comfortable with who we are, you know. And like you said, if somebody didn't, I mean, my mom was extremely overweight. I mean, she's only 5 foot. She's just 5 foot. I'm 5 foot 1.5. She's 5 foot, and she weighed over 200 pounds at one time. I mean, she was quite huge, and yet I was not embarrassed. My mom was embarrassed about her appearance, but I wasn't. I loved my mom. I didn't care who came to the house to see her. And like you said, if somebody didn't like her, well, then they didn't have to come home with me the next time, you know. But I never went through that, you know. And but the point of this is that you can coach children to be okay with things like that by just putting it in a healthier perspective for them. So some
mm-hmm.
kids will get it naturally, like you and I did.
Mm-hmm.
Other kids can be coached to feel that way, you know. So you have the ones that kind of go there on their own speed, and then you have the other ones that can be guided there just by hearing a positive word here or there, and all of a sudden they have like an aha moment. I mean, I had aha moments when I was very young. I heard a teacher say something, or one of my friends said something, or I read this or I read that, and you know, like little positive comments would just impact me. And it doesn't take a lot. It just takes that one comment that makes a kid feel better about themselves and okay with themselves. And I just think it's such a tragedy that these kids that end up taking their own lives never heard that one thing that kind of redirected them or turned them in a better place, you know. And who knows what would have happened if they had just heard one positive thing from one person. And sometimes that's all it takes to really divert a tragedy.
Well, again, you know, that gets pretty deep. And we've talked a lot recently about mental illness and about depression and about all the things that come with it. And it is a very helpless place to be because there are no magic words. There is no teaspoon of sugar, if you will, to make things sweeter. It's just not like that. And if there is a problem that is greater than just at face value, then that has to be addressed as well. And I think even though a couple of weeks ago when we talked about some of the reasons that people were institutionalized and stuff like that, I thought to myself, my good God. We went from one extreme to the other in this world. We went from taking people into debtor's prison for not paying their taxes and incarcerating or institutionalizing women because they couldn't get over the death of a child, or a soldier because he couldn't get over the things that he saw in one of our many wars or something like that, to now just putting somebody on a drug and sending them back out there to fend for themselves. You know, we don't ever seem to be able to get in that happy medium place. Everything is either this.
Or worse yet, you put somebody on a drug to get them in a good place, and then their insurance runs out, and then they can't get the drug anymore, and now you've got somebody that's basically a dangerous lunatic running around because their insurance ran out.
A very, very sad state of affair, the insurance and the medical association and the red tape in regard to that, that's such a big fiasco. I mean, when you talk about a three-ring circus being the biggest circus there is, when we talk about politics or medicine, they're like 8 or 9 or 10 rings. I think about it a lot, and I'm talking about some of this stuff on the show, but it snowballs into this big, huge, I don't know, this place that you can't solve any of it. You can't even get close enough to any of it to touch it and feel like you could make any changes because it's just so far out of control. It's just way too far out of control. And that was one of the things when I talked about Facebook in the beginning. I see people that I care about making comments about how moms with 5 or 6 kids and no man in their life should have to take a drug test before they get welfare. And I want to say to them, why are you saying that? Well, because, you know, she can afford to get herself, an ounce of weed or a case of beer to drink all week, and she's worried about her kids. And I'm like, the point is that if you get her food stamps, she can't buy beer and she can't buy weed with food stamps. She can buy food. And we're talking about taking care of the kids. We're not talking about supporting her habits. So why would you even go there?
Right. You know,
you're not fixing a problem by taking away things that you think somebody else shouldn't get because you're not getting them. I just, you know, when they designed some of the programs that are out there right now, it was to take care of kids. It wasn't to take care of the grown-ups. It was to take care of the kids. And that still needs to be done in a lot of different places and a lot of different homes. And today, especially, a lot of people need help. Today, you and I both know that. You and I both see that every day, Shelley.
Absolutely.
People that can't make eat, people that need help. My two young kids here, my 21-year-old grandson and his girlfriend, 18, he's going to school every night, working every day. She's now working two jobs. If they didn't live here with me, they'd pay me a modest rent, but I provide everything. You know, food, dish detergent, laundry detergent, toilet paper, shampoo. I do all of that, and they pay me a little bit of rent. They couldn't live on their own, and they're both working their little butts off.
Yep.
You know, they really couldn't. So it's scary times, but I see all these people, and they get angry about food stamps, or they get angry about somebody getting Medicaid, and I look at him and I say, you're going to take Medicaid away from that little three-year-old? What are you thinking? You want to punish the mother some more? Hasn't she punished herself enough?
Well,
I don't know.
Unfortunately, in everything that's out there, of course, there are people that abuse the system, okay? But just because there are some people that abuse the system, just because there are some people that are lazy and really don't deserve the benefits, the bottom line is there are some people out there that desperately need it, all right? And like you said, why would you take it away from somebody who absolutely needs it just because there's somebody out there that abuses it? I mean, it's like, It's like what we were talking about, like having a cookie-cutter attitude towards things. You know, it's there. There are some people that absolutely need it that are only surviving because of food stamps or only surviving because of Medicare, okay, you know? And it's like, so, all right, so there's people out there that abuse it, but most people don't abuse it. Most people, that's how they get by, you know? So why begrudge them? You know, and to say that every, you know, single mom who's got a couple of kids is a drug addict or this and that, that's just stereotypical bigotry, just like anything else. Are there some that do that? Yeah. There are some women that don't have respect for their body and they get pregnant over and over again. They really don't care about their kids. But again, that's not every one of them. I don't even believe that that's the majority of them. But those are the ones that people see. Right. Those are the ones that people see. Those are the ones that get on the news. So like with every other type of stereotype, all right, the couple of hundred then taint it for the tens of thousands that are just good people. Maybe they made a couple of errors in judgment, but they're good people and they're just trying to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I say, I guess the point is that it's just like the comment I made about all the comments about the president or the pope or this one or that one, and then we want our kids to be nice to each other. Then we're upset about a website where kids pick on each other to the degree that a child takes their own life, and yet we have adults in our world right this minute, right today, that are abusing each other to a degree where if it was, if their minds were not mature enough, I believe adults would be taking their lives as well. A little bit of maturity goes a long way. To find, you know, every time I read something about the kids, I think to myself, you know, yeah, they need some help, they need some guidance, but good God Almighty, who are we going to get to guide them? Because half the grown-ups in their life screwed up than they've even had the chance to get yet.
You know, and again, and it'll probably sound like an oversimplistic comment to make, but a lot of what's wrong today with society in general, with the amount of crime there is, with the amount of drug use, with everything else, is really a breakdown in family values because people don't, you know, I mean, I applaud you because your household is different than this, okay? But I know so many families that, you know, the kids are in their room, they're on their computers, the mother makes dinner, nobody sits at the table together, nobody talks, they don't even know who they are. They're a family, and yet nobody sits down for a meal, you know, and these counseling centers that are out there that try to help families that are in jeopardy, one of the first things they say is start having meals together, having everybody sit at the table, even if you just sit there the first few times and stare at each other, you know, you're a family. You should care about each other. You should engage each other. You should talk. You should show that you care, you know. But when you have these kids just, you know, grabbing something out of the freezer and sticking it in the microwave, and nobody even sits and talks to each other, you know? Mm-hmm. In your house, you might have people all over the map, but the bottom line is they're all talking to you, and you're talking to them. So even if it's not structured, you're still getting that benefit out of it. But there's families that don't have any of it. Not only are their meals not structured, all right, but they never converse with their kids. So the whole family unit, family value, where a lot of parents, although they love their children, I'm not saying the love's not there, but they don't connect with their children, so they don't see the sign when something is going wrong because they don't really know who their children are. They don't actually sit there and have a conversation with them. And something as simple as, even if you don't have time to do it every night, once or twice a week, have family dinner night, everybody's expected to be at that table, and you interact a little bit and make sure that you know each other, you know? It sounds so overly simplistic, but I don't think it is. I think it would make a big deal, big difference.
It's not simplistic, especially today in the way things, everybody going here and everybody going there and everybody doing this and everybody doing that. It hasn't been what I would call simplistic in 30 years. But what it is doable. And when you care about your family and love your family, there are certain things that you just have to do. It's like getting up and going to work every day. It's like getting up in the morning and brushing your teeth. They are not things that take care of themselves. They are things that you have to work at, like any kind of a relationship. If you are married for a really long time, it's because you've put work into it. If you've got a friendship that you have been blessed to have for a very long time, it's because you've worked on it. If you have anything, it's because you've put something into it to get something out of it. There is no such thing as just getting something for nothing. In any
right.
arena, there's no such thing.
Right.
If you've got something, it's because you did something to earn it and you worked for it. And
mm-hmm.
that's what makes it worth something.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah, I think that, again, I think the social websites have a place in our society today. I think if they're done properly and done with, some security so that people know, that they have to be kinder to each other if they want people to be kind to them. There's always
mm-hmm.
going to be an ass, let's face it. And there's always going to be one. But if you give them nothing to work with, they have nothing to do.
Right. Right.
You know?
Well, I mean, like I wasn't a big fan of Facebook, and I finally engaged it really only a couple years ago. I think maybe three years ago. And within 6 months of creating a site for myself, maybe 4 years ago, within 6 months of creating a site for myself, my ex-husband that I hadn't spoken to in 25 years, and our marriage ended a little stressfully, sought me out to reconnect with me. And just, and we ended up, he was down here in Florida, and we ended up getting together for dinner, and now we're good friends, and we stay in touch with each other. We didn't rekindle the relationship, but the bottom line is that was a very unique and a very healing experience for me to have somebody that at one time in my life was very important to me, that was always a sad memory for me of how the marriage broke down, and then to have him seek me out 25 years later to tell me that, he still cared about me and that he wanted things to be okay between us was just an amazing experience. So, and I've heard other stories like that through Facebook. So that's where social media, bringing people together, having, like you said, having lost loves or people that you kind of drifted away from that you still think about from time to time, be able to find each other is incredible,
It's beautiful.
But it's like a double-edged sword where it can be misused to harm people, It can do extraordinary good, like the experience I had and some of the experiences you've had, but people need to be responsible because what you put down on Facebook is out there forever. You don't just go in and once you post something, it's kind of there,
Right.
So people need
maybe that we could offer out there into the universe instead of spying on all of us to see what covert opportunities we're all up to, our government and things like that, why don't we spend a little time and effort on monitoring some of the things that our kids are involved in, and if there is something going on, then that would be a good place to render some help and some guidance. If you really
of
feel
course.
Like spying on somebody, that would be the thing to do because that would at least end in a good way and come to a good means instead of just digging up dirt on people who aren't doing anything wrong. Social media, there should be probably somebody who monitors a little bit to some degree. And if that's going on between young people, then something needs to be done about it. We're almost out of time, so I want to thank Shelley. And next week,
we should be on a regular week, Monday through Friday, and I thank everybody for bearing with me this past week. And Izzy will be back next Wednesday, and I look forward to next week. So from my heart to yours, everybody, good night and God bless. Night, Shelley. See you in the
morning,
honey.
Yes, you will. See me in the morning. Good night, all.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night.